This show furnished by Rowan, Gervy, and Wynn.
It's time for Gervy's Law, the intersection of law and life, with your host, injury compensation attorney, author, and mentor, Alan Gervy. Alan is managing attorney at the law firm of Rowan, Gervy, and Wynn, a workers' compensation law firm who have represented injured workers for over 35 years. Joined today by his co-host, radio personality, and television host, Carrie Kasem. Carrie brings a fresh, real perspective to the intersection of law and life, turning Murphy's Law upside down. And now, here are Alan Gervy and Carrie Kasem.
Good afternoon, Los Angeles, and everyone listening all over the world on KABC.com. I am Alan Gervy, the managing partner of the law firm of Rowan, Gervy, and Wynn. And today, as usual, I am here live to be the managing partner of your life. And I'm barely alive. Right. I just flew in. I just got in from from your home away from home.
What, you were in Canada?
That's not your home away from home.
Oh, my home, Michigan.
Listen to
me. No,
you
said
speak.
Your home away from
no,
home.
No, you so gotta listen.
You
didn't listen. Your home away. What's your home away from home?
I mean, I have so many. I do.
It's Las Vegas. You've been going there.
That was the second one.
Give me what? So you've been fibbing this whole time when you say you're 2 weeks in Vegas?
Totally lying.
I can't
lie to you about
it.
Everything. You should know this by now,
you
Alan.
You lie like a rug.
I do. Yes, I've been in Vegas.
So then why don't you remember
that's
it when
not my
I say
home
that?
Away from home. That's a place
so
I go. I'm getting
treatment. I went on a boys' weekend this weekend. I took my little six-year-old son, Hudson, which is me and Hudson, and we went specially to see the Winnipeg Jets play the Las Vegas Golden Knights.
Oh, that's fun.
Amazing.
Did he have a good time?
Did he have a good time? He had a great time.
Did you take him anywhere else?
The Jets, yeah, no. I just took him to the game,
circus,
took him
circus.
Drinking. No, we went to New York, and he went to the arcade. He had so much fun.
Oh, that's cool.
You know, I'll tell you, the Jets won in overtime. He was so excited. It was phenomenal. But what was really great in pregame warm-up, two players, Blake Wheeler, the captain of the Jets,
wow.
And Matthew Perreault, who's a veteran, came up to him, and they wanted to make sure that he had a puck. And they came in, and they reached over with a big smile over the glass and tossed the puck. The first puck that came, I wasn't expecting it, and I was holding him at the glass.
Yeah, yeah.
And I went to catch the puck.
You dropped him.
He went flying head first. From,
no!
Yeah, and he came up with this big smile, and Matthew Perreault, who had thrown the puck over, was looking, is he okay, is he okay? Like, I could have sued Matthew Perreault for throwing the puck, distracting me, dropping my kid on the ice.
That's horrible. That's horrible.
So the next time when Blake Wheeler came over, I was ready. I was holding him in one arm, and Blake Wheeler, Matthew Perreault had flipped it with his stick. Blake Wheeler watched and reached over,
and
little Hudson has a Wheeler jersey on, and he was so nice. I got to tell you, when these athletes are so great, it means so much to these little guys. I mean, Hudson was so excited. And I'm going to tell you a story because it's not only the athletes that can make someone feel good. Anyone can make someone feel good. Go back 3 years ago. We're walking down Ventura Boulevard in Encino, California. We're walking down the street. We just finished Encino Little League. Hudson's wearing his little Giants uniform. And this strange man, and I'm going to emphasize strange, comes up to him and says, hey, I love your uniform. You're doing so great. How was your game? He starts talking to him, and Hudson's so excited about this man talking to him. Just walking down the street. He's wearing this Baltimore Orioles hat, of all things. And he's the
familiar.
Friendliest guy.
This sounds familiar.
Very famous. A legend. A legend.
Did I
broadcast?
Is this really true?
This is absolutely.
When is this?
As we say, Emmis, it's true.
How long ago?
Oh, my
is
God.
This?
Emmis. That's like a prison
I haven't been introduced
term.
Yet, but no. It's okay. I
haven't done the big introduction.
He does.
I love
no,
this.
You have to wait for the introduction.
Okay,
but he is
but
famous.
But I love the fact that I've already got a reputation as being a nice guy. This is,
you know these athletes don't necessarily do it, but when they do, it makes someone feel so good. This guy, who's a legend, who I recognized at the time because I was a big fan of the ESPN show Up Close, where he interviewed over 5,000 very, very important, significant personalities, not only athletes, but actors, writers, producers.
Musicians.
I'm going to drop some names because I know that he could drop them, but it's easier for me. Howard Cosell, Vin Scully, Magic Johnson, Muhammad Ali, Will Chamberlain, Seinfeld, Tom Hanks, Madonna, Jerry Lewis, Tiger Woods when he was 11 years old, Shaq, Charles Barkley, of course, and the list goes on and on. Bobby Knight and O.J. Simpson. Mm-hmm. There's two fine fellows.
Yeah.
Seven-time Emmy Award winner, seven-time Cable Ace Award winner. His one-man show is raved about. Larry King calls it hysterical, amongst other great reviews. He's come out with a new book. I'm holding it in my hand. It's called That's What I'm Talking About. And he's got two other books. Jerry Maguire steals the show on Jerry Maguire. Forget about that silly scene when you said you had me at hello. Forget that. We're talking about crying, having Cuba Gooding Jr. crying. None other, Roy Firestone in the house.
Boy, I should just leave. This is unbelievable. This is like, where's the publicity? I don't need a publicist. This is fantastic.
I know, it's true.
I just, not only am I getting the introduction, but I'm also a humanitarian and greatest guy of all time, saying hi to children. This is tremendous.
Isn't it something,
it
Roy?
Really is.
You've had such an illustrious career, and you sit here today. You've got to be proud of so many things. Tell me what you're most proud of.
Oh, well, personally, I'm proud of my boys. I'm proud of two boys that one is going to be 30 and one is going to be 27. And that's what we start with. Professionally, I'm proud that I got to do this for a long time. I get to do what you guys do and interview people and experience things. But there's another side of me, which we're going to talk about, and that is that I'm a performer. I'm a singer. Yeah. I'm an impressionist. I'm a monologist. I'm a storyteller, and I do it all over the country and have for almost 30 years.
Okay, what's a monologist?
Someone who does monologues.
I've never heard that before.
It does sound like somebody does, like fingernails.
Monologist.
I talked to my monologist the other day.
Being monogamous.
It's the same thing.
Sometimes monologists aren't monogamous.
I mean, when I drop names like Frank Sinatra, Smokey Robinson, Tony Bennett, Sammy Davis Jr., Neil Diamond, and my all-time favorite, if you haven't heard Roy Firestone doing the Bee Gees.
I got to hear that.
We're going to try. We sent some clips. I don't know if we're going to get them. He's got no thumbs up yet.
No, here's a thumbs up. There's a thumbs up.
How many thumbs are up?
How many thumbs?
We sent twice. We sent the video, the audio of the thing I transferred. But we'll talk about
we
it.
I'll do some bits. We still got time. We want to talk about your start in the business. You were in Miami.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about how you got into this business and how you were able to elevate yourself to one of the most well-known interviewers
in the 90s and moving forward. Well, I started, I was a bat boy for a baseball team named the Baltimore Orioles. That's why I wore that Oriole hat, and I was pretty much wear it all the time. I was bat boy in 1971, and I was
91?
Right. 91. I was about 14, 15 years old at the time. I was playing hooky from school, and I couldn't even drive yet. My mom took me to the spring training home of the Baltimore Orioles, and I talked my way into the locker room and got to meet all the great players. But what I did, Alan, and you would get a kick out of this, you too, Carrie, that I didn't want to just be a bat boy. I wanted to be somebody they knew and really liked and trusted and be their friend somehow. And so I was a performer in the locker room. I used to perform impressions and bits. I would do an Earl Weaver impression. I would do...
Sand, dirt on the guys.
Earl Weaver was the manager of the Orioles. He was a crazy man. He was like a psychotic.
Yes. No, I have heard of that.
He was baseball's version of Son of Sam. I think that was the term. But I did that, and one thing led to another. Next thing I know, when I grow up, I'm 19, 20 years old. I'm interning at a local station. Then I'm on the air at a local station. And all lo and behold, the very players that I was handing jock straps to are now watching me do the show.
Wow.
They still, to this day, think of me as the kid, the bat boy. To this day, Jim Palmer called me today, the famous Jim Palmer, and he said, I still can't get over the fact that you're still that schmuck, I use that term.
That's right.
From when you were 15 years old, and look at what's going on.
I'm not 15 anymore.
Right.
You're not, but you dropped Jim Palmer's name, and it's really important because I heard you say you did something with Jim Palmer and his family that is so meaningful. Yeah. And I think right off the talk, you know, okay. you don't want to call yourself a humanitarian, but let's see, not a schmuck, let's see a mensch. Let's
well,
hear the mensch.
If, again, all I can say, because we don't have all the clips and it's we can't run every clip, but if people want to see a really moving piece, it's called Spencer on YouTube, Spencer Roy Firestone. One more time, Spencer Roy Firestone. It's the story of Jim Palmer, who was a very famous baseball player, really handsome, dashing, really like Hugh Grant handsome. I mean, really right. good-looking guy. Right. Married a couple of times, then he finally gets married a third time. And he's sort of the bon vivant, man about town. Girls are crazy, swoon for him. But he falls in love with his stepson, who's autistic. And this kid is a savant. Now, there's one out of 30 boys in America now are autistic. It's an incredible
wow.
fact. It's an amazing – it's stunning how we see this so
prevalent.
Often. Prevalent. That's what I was looking for. So he embraces this kid, and he loves this kid, and the kid is a savant about trains. So I have I'm a train fanatic, and I have, you know, model trains. And every Christmas, we put together this elaborate train setup.
Oh, do you do the thing where it goes around the top and around and down?
It's unbelievable. Oh. And they come from miles around.
Well,
Spencer came to my house with Jim Palmer, and I did a piece called Spencer. It's on YouTube, as I said. And he sat there, and he starts going... and he's got a very monotone. People think it's Rain Man. Every kid who's autistic has this. No, it's not true right. at all. Very rare. But this kid happens to be a savant. And he gives me, as he's watching the trains, Alan and Carrie, every train schedule from San Diego to Los Angeles.
Oh, my God.
Then he does Bavarian and German and French. Whoa. And I'm Whoa. Blown away by this. The bottom line, the story is, if this story is, it would be a great movie. It's sort of like a Rain Man story. But this boy.
We do movies here. We can promote that.
This this boy is moved him, inspired him. And it's a very powerful story.
That's beautiful.
How old is he?
He's now going to be 20.
Wow.
He's going to be 20 now, but he was a little boy. And, I mean, he sits there and he goes, that is a 1929, it transferred to the car that's got it done 1976, and then it moved from – he can sit there and he can – remember that scene in Rain Man where he was giving you all the numbers and stats? This kid can do it.
Yeah.
And he does it for scripts. He can read any line from Star Wars – for any of the Star Wars series.
Unbelievable.
And he has it all memorized?
He's got it all memorized, and he does it verbatim. He can do it backwards and forwards. It's incredible. But it moved Jim Palmer. It changed his life because he realized that it wasn't all about him anymore. And it would make a great – well, I did a piece about it, but it would make a great movie. It really would.
Wow. Yeah. It's just – I mean, I'm sitting
I'm
here.
I'm going to go look it up on YouTube.
It's called Spencer with Roy Firestone.
And okay. Jim Palmer, while we're talking about the Orioles, he's not the only guy that you have a special relationship with. You have sleepovers with Brooks Robinson.
Well, that sounds a little leading there. But Brooks Robinson, one of the great baseball players of all time at third base, defensively anyway, a Hall of Famer. He's now 82 years old. I've known him since I was 15, 14 years old. And imagine, Carrie, I don't know who was your hero, Carrie, growing up?
My dad.
Okay, well, of course.
Yeah.
But I mean, was there a celebrity hero besides your dad who was a celebrity hero?
Gosh, you know, people ask me that all the time. And there's people that I admire.
Because you knew everybody in the
but...
music business probably,
yeah,
too.
Well, I grew up in Tom Petty's house.
Okay,
literally.
So let's say, it's not a great example because he's almost, you know, he's from this generation. But imagine Tom Petty spending a weekend at your house to stay with you. It's like winning Tiger Beat magazine's Win a Date
right,
with David
right,
Cassidy.
Right. I mean, yeah, I had crushes,
right.
So that would have been cool, like if there were some of my crushes.
But a few months ago, Brooks Robinson, the legend, and Jim Palmer both stayed at my house because they were here for Frank Robinson's memorial, Frank Robinson's a very famous baseball player. But imagine the whole weekend, you're still a kid again.
Right.
You become the kid again. And these people are sleeping in your rooms
That's
and in
so
your bed.
Cool. Did they have good stories? Did they tell you stuff?
I've known both of them for pretty much 50 years. But to see literally Brooks Robinson sleeping in my bed, because I wouldn't have him sleep any other bed.
There's your documentary right there.
Right.
Bedtime stories
I basically,
Brooks Robinson.
I said, he says, where am I going to sit, sleep, Roy? And I said, you're not sleeping in the guest room. You're sleeping in my room. He goes, no, no, no. And I said, Brooks, you're the king. You're Elvis.
Yeah.
I'm just the guy who owns the house.
Where you slept on the couch.
I slept in the guest room.
Yeah.
And I can say Brooks Robinson slept in my bed. Literally. Unbelievable.
Okay. We need to take a break. We're getting
brought it up, Alan.
Well, he explained it. It's okay. We're talking to Roy Firestone. This is Gervie's Law. We've got to take a quick break. A lot of good stuff coming after break. You're listening to KBC 790 right here on Sunday afternoon with Roy Firestone. No, I don't want no scrub. All right. We are back right here at Gervie's Law. Roy Firestone is running the studio now.
Really?
He's everywhere.
We're trying to get some of these bits together, folks, so we can have a little fun with some of the voices and characters that we do.
You know, and the bits are great. People can't believe what kind of talent Roy has.
Oh, thank you.
When we're not talking about just interviewing, that, you know, goes without saying. There's thousands and thousands of tape of him interviewing people like Muhammad Ali and Magic Johnson and Howard Cosell. But what you really need to see is when he's doing these impressions.
It's
really something. I want people to hear what these impressions
you
are
mentioned,
about.
You mentioned Muhammad Ali and Howard Cosell, and I'm going to give for you now. You remember, you're too
Howard
young.
Howard Cosell.
Oh, okay,
come
you got
now,
it. You got
course
it.
Of course I know who Howard Cosell
now,
is.
Are we going to do the rap thing in a second? I'll tell you when. But I thought about this. Howard Cosell and Muhammad Ali were like a, they were a tandem. They were known as intertwined, their careers, their lives. But today, with the social media being what it is and hip-hop music being what it is, I thought Howard Cosell and Muhammad Ali as rappers might be an interesting concept. So I'm going to give for you now Howard Cosell and Muhammad Ali as rappers. Put it in my ear. Let's go. Here we go. A little louder, please.
Yay.
There we go. Hello, everybody. I'm Howard Cosell. Without further ado, there's the opening bell. We're here today to view and observe a three-time champ with a hell of a nerve. He fought all comers with speed and savvy, though in later years, he got kind of flabby. Ladies and gentlemen, Howard Cosell and Ali.
Howard Cosell, I hear what you say. You're full of hot air. You got a bad toupee. I fought with style and I fought with class. You ain't nothing but a pain in my ass. There it is.
Wow. I love it. Carrie, you are so quick with
She's
your phone.
She's got the social
no,
media
but
thing
I missed the Howard Cosell. Just do a little bit of the Howard.
Hello again, Carrie. Nice to make your acquaintance. It's so great to be here at KABC. ABC! Was the network of Monday Night Football. So there you go.
That was awesome.
And I have to tell you that Muhammad Ali was literally in my neighborhood growing up because I'm from Miami Beach, Florida, originally, where he trained for much of his life. In fact, the week that the famous picture with Ali and the Beatles, which you've seen, that was taken about six blocks from my house growing up. That's 1964. And that was the same week the Beatles were in town for the Ed Sullivan Show. So the two biggest, most iconic figures in American, probably in the second half of the 20th century, right there with as big as anything, was right behind me. And the Beatles stayed at my friend's house because they wanted to escape the crowds.
That's crazy.
Incredible. You know, the only thing my dad, he said to me, he's like, I've never asked for an autograph. There's one, and he said, one time in my life.
Paul McCartney.
No.
Who?
Muhammad Ali.
Oh, really? Ali.
And he still had the gloves. I don't know where they are now, but he had the gloves that he asked.
I used to love it. Listen, Casey Kasem was the greatest of all time. He was
American Top 40. I am not rolling.
American Top 40 was the greatest show.
I love the facial expression.
Casey Kasem was greatest. He was the greatest in broadcasting. I was the greatest boxer. He was so great.
Wait, who was the greatest broadcaster?
Casey Kasem was the greatest broadcaster. Radio, the old Americans are 40. He played the Temptations, Smokey Robinson, all the great people. Aretha Franklin, all the greatest of all time.
He played Smokey Robinson?
Yes, he did.
Well, let's hear him.
Well, I can't do without the music, but I can do this. We're going to give you a little Neil Diamond. Now, I don't have the reverb to give it the Neil Diamond feel, but
he'll put on the reverb.
No, he doesn't have any reverb today. But give me a little background. Here's Neil Diamond.
All the people around the world, they come to America. And they come with their flag unfurled. All come to America. And they come with a singular joy. All come to America. And they come like a girl and a boy. They come to America. My country, 'tis of thee. I'm glad I'm on KABC.
Yes!
Of the ICE.
today. There it is.
All right. Where are the applause, Wayman? Come on.
That was awesome.
That was
well,
great.
I thought I'd throw that one in there for you.
That was
and
really
I do
good.
About, I'm doing actually a show this weekend, but it's a, one of those called private shows, so I can't tell everyone come out and see it.
No.
But I'm doing a show this weekend, next Saturday night. I do about 16 celebrity singers, and I do a very special homage to one of the great broadcasters in my life, and it happens to be the great Casey Kasem.
Which yeah, is, we count Kasem.
We count down all of the great stars. We do people like Johnny Mathis, Tony Bennett, the Bee Gees, Neil Diamond, Smokey Robinson, Frank Sinatra.
So what are you doing? You're playing Casey and you're counting them down and then you play each?
I turn around. I start with Casey and turn around. I don't know if we have a shot at we still
Nothing yet.
I had sent it out and hopefully we before the show is over. We have any
You know what happened here.
What happened here?
Casey's wife, Jean, intercepted it and said, not if I don't get any money from this. Roy Firestone will not be doing Casey Kasem.
That's what happened.
Carrie, I have to tell you this story. Okay. You got to take a break? Well, maybe we'll tell.
No, we're good.
We got it?
You're good. Go.
I'm doing a show. This is probably in the 90s, probably 91 or 92. And I'm doing the Casey Kasem countdown. And I'm counting them all the year. And here is Mr. Frank Sinatra on, you know, on Casey's countdown, right? Do you know that I didn't know your dad was in the audience?
No. Okay.
And he's
hold on. This is so weird because I'm trying to get all of us in here. So I'm like, my back is turned to you, but this is going to look cool.
There it is.
Okay. Hello. So you got to get in here.
So I'm doing this bit. I'm going, you know, he goes, hi again, everybody. I'm Casey Kasem, an American Top 40. And I said, a soldier from far away says, dear Casey, I haven't seen my girlfriend in 35 years. I'm beginning to wonder if maybe she's not my girlfriend anymore. You know, I'm doing the whole Casey thing. But would you be so kind for my girlfriend, wherever you might be, to play the Beatles? And I do the Beatles. Now, I'm sitting doing this bit, and it's going over well, and I'm enjoying it. I have a new bit, a brand new bit, where I become Paul McCartney. That's a whole different story. And Casey stands up, and he goes, Roy Firestone, this is the real deal. And he stands right up in the middle. It blew my mind. This was at the Beverly Wilshire for a fundraiser. Your dad did a lot of fundraisers.
Yeah, he lived at the Beverly Wilshire for a very long time.
Right, and so that was...
Wow.
That's about a trippy experience to do an impression of the guy's
there.
You
know, Roy, that is a trippy experience. I got to tell you, you know, you mentioned Paul McCartney. I'm sure Paul has never talked to you before, ever in your life. Isn't that true?
When I did the movie Jerry Maguire, which is a story into itself, there's a scene in the end of the movie where the guy gets the money, Cuba Gooding Jr., and he hugs me for getting the big contract, and he jumps across the table and hugs me, and he says, don't make me cry, Roy. It's a famous scene. It's an iconic scene every day of my life. People come up to me and ask me, say that, don't make me cry, Roy.
You should have written a book, Don't Make Me Cry.
I did. Okay. I did, my second book. So I'm in Liverpool, England, and I didn't think this movie, really, truly, I thought it was going to be a bomb, and I thought it was going to be on the cutting room floor.
Jerry Maguire?
I never thought it was going to be. I didn't know. I literally forgot it was even in the movie. The movie comes out 6 months. I'm in Liverpool, England. I'm at a reception, and I get a tap on my shoulder. I turn around. I swear to you, Paul McCartney. And he goes, I think I know you. And I said, no, you don't. He goes, yeah, I think I know you. I've met you somewhere. And I said, Paul, you have never. First of all, it's a major thrill, sir, but I have never met you. He goes, no, I know you. Don't tell me I don't know you because I do. And the woman who was with him, his publicist, says, he's talking about the movie Jerry Maguire. And I went, oh, you mean Jerry Maguire? He goes, that's it. You're the guy who makes him cry. You're the guy who says, don't make me cry. What's your name? So I said, what's my name? I almost forgot my name. He goes, I said, Roy. He goes, don't make me cry, Roy.
Oh.
And then for the next like 15 minutes, he's bringing Liverpool friends of his from high school, not famous people. You got to meet Jimmy McGurney. He's one of the great. he's one of the funniest guys you've ever met. And he's bringing these random strange guys who are not famous.
Right.
This is the guy who makes him cry, Jimmy. You know, what's your name again, Roy? Don't make me cry, Roy.
Oh,
and that really happened. You know? And I do a bit. Awesome. I actually have a bit in my live show, brand new, that I just went through CGI and green screen effects. I am on the Ed Sullivan Show as Paul McCartney, but it's me.
Wow. Wow.
With the rest of the Beatles.
It's funny.
And I'm going to do it Saturday night.
I'm laughing so hard, I'm starting to cry.
Wait.
Don't make me cry. We got to take a break.
Oh, I want to know where his show is. Oh, it's a private one. Shoot.
Well, I'll get you in.
You can get in. You know Casey Kasem.
I do.
Counting him down.
We're counting him down right now. We got to take a break. You're listening to Gervie's Law right here on Talk Radio 790 KBC. Yeah, we're getting jiggy with it right here on Gervie's Law. I'm Alan Gervie. I'm here with Carrie Kasem. And Roy Firestone, he is brilliant, multi-talented. His book is called That's What I'm Talking About.
Available on Amazon.
Amazon and RoyFirestone.com.
If you want it signed, you got to go to RoyFirestone.com.
I just got mine signed.
Yes, you did.
Very nice.
And you didn't have to go to RoyFirestone.com.
I didn't. You just came to me. And Bob Costa says, Roy Firestone's careful preparation, empathy, and genuine interest in his subjects made him one of television's best interviewers. Sports Illustrated called him the best sports interviewer of all time.
What do they know?
What do they know? And, you know, we've got the foreword by Bill Walton. There's so many people. You've hobnobbed with everyone. You come in here, and it's almost like you could count down all of the
almost
singers.
Almost all.
You could do a top 40.
Before I do this, I want to tell people this is a true story. Johnny Mathis came on my show. This is really true.
Everything else hasn't been
no,
true.
No, but I mean, this is...
I'm a lawyer. You're not going to get away with that.
Steve Edwards always says, why does everything have to be, this is a true story? We assume that it's a true story, right? He's right.
Right.
He's listening right now.
Great.
Anyway, so...
Hi, Steve.
Johnny Mathis comes on my. I wanted to have him on because he was a real long jump champion. He was one of the great long jumpers.
I didn't know that.
Before, in like 52, 54.
Really?
Yeah. And he was almost in the Olympic team. He would have been in the Olympic team. He signed a deal with Capitol and he couldn't. He was going to pursue a singing career.
Wow.
But that's a true story. So he comes on the show talking all sports, Olympics, and then I decide to do an impression of him. And he paid me what I think is still the greatest compliment as an impressionist of all time. He said, I've had a lot of people do an impression of me. Yours is the very best. And aww. He literally thought it was him. So I'm actually going to do for you now. Carrie, people all know, Casey, of course, the famous father, and Carrie Kasem. And this is from my actual show that I just performed. I'm going to give you a small clip of Casey counting him down with Johnny Mathis and with the great Tony Bennett.
Wow.
Hi again, everybody. I'm Casey Kasem. I'm recounting down the last 50 years of music on American Top 40. All the music you love and some you despise. Let's start the fabulous 50s. Back when air was clean and sex was dirty. The year was 1957. Gas was 28 cents a gallon. A time for lovers dancing close. And still a good 10 years before everything went into the crapper. Here's a young crooner named Johnny Mathis and Misty.
Look at me. I'm as helpless as a kitten of a day. Never knowing my love from my right, my heart from my love. I get to stay until my chin love. Oh, oh, look at me.
Johnny Mathis and Misty, everybody. Now it's time for 1961. The sound of a boy from Queens singing his signature hit, San Francisco, Tony Bennett.
I left my heart.
Yeah, let's see everybody.
In San Francisco. Above the blue. Home to you.
Yeah.
Wow.
There it is.
That's so awesome.
But I had your wonderful late dad doing B.J. Thomas, Gordon Lightfoot, Boz Skaggs, Sammy Davis, Smokey Rowe, all of them. And he does his Casey Counting Them Down, and he does the story, and I do this all at one piece. It's a lot harder than it sounds because I'm doing two people at once, singing two people at once, and then Casey introducing them. I only wish your dad could have heard this one because he
I
saw me do a little of it.
He loved it. He loved
it. Did he like people
when
made people?
Yeah. When SNL would do, you know, making fun of him and Gene.
Oh God.
Dana Carvey would do such a great job, and he just absolutely
loved
it.
I will tell you that there are very few truly iconic broadcasters who did it over a course of 40, 50. He did America Top 40, I believe, 40 years.
Just almost 40, yeah.
About 40 years.
Yep.
And it was, I love Paul Harvey. I loved your dad. Yeah. I loved all the greatest people who did it for a long time for this country, and your dad, wherever he is, and I'm sure he's in wherever good place it is, he would get a kick out of it because he was a true hero of mine.
Oh, thank you so much. Yeah, that was great. You have a great voice. Not
thank
only
you.
This amazing comic timing and just very funny. Your voice is fantastic.
Thank you. I think I'm a pretty good singer. I don't think I'm an elite singer, but I do impressions of singers.
Yeah.
And as a kid, you know, there were all people. You know, Sammy Davis was my first. Billy Crystal, when I first came to L.A., we used to do it over brunch on a Sunday.
Really?
Hey, man, I dig what you're doing. You know, and all that. So I had a chance to develop my Sammy Davis with Billy. And, of course, Billy did it on Saturday Night Live, too.
Wow. You know, you hear the impression of Casey Kasem, and it's just spot on.
It's good. It's a very good
one.
Have
you heard of others, or is that
the Dana.
Best?
Sure,
Dana. Yeah, Dana was very, very good. There's been a few people, you know, I've done radio for so long, that will call up and say, can I do an impersonation? Some are so bad. And some are, I remember one, somebody called up and said, it's the best one I've ever heard. That was a very, very long time ago. Yours is very close. It's very, very
good. I used to love that when your dad when he would do a song, he'd always have a little a woman in Topeka, Kansas, right? You know, it would always be something where, and it would it
so
somehow
good.
Get, and you know, here's the Tramps and Light, and, you know, whatever it was. He would come up with some kind, and of course, obviously, that's what made him great.
Yeah.
That he was a storyteller and a background guy, backstory. Here, I actually had a bit, and I've never done this before. What would Vin Scully be like as the host of American Top 40? Right?
That's funny.
Now, the concept is, you know, this is a marvelous story. I'm really not used to being America Top 40, but here's a wonderful, wonderful song. You know, this week, the number 4 song in America is a marvelous song, but by the Captain and Tennille. Interesting to note that the Captain is not a member of the military, and Tony Tennille is not a man. Here's Love Will Keep Us Together. I could almost hear...
That is so good! Please say that's in your show.
No, it isn't.
You've got that in your show.
But Vin Scully doing American Top, because that's the only iconic thing I could think of. Another, who could replace Casey? Nobody.
Right.
But Vin Scully might be somebody who would have the command, and yet Vin Scully he wouldn't know the band. This is a marvelous story, you know, whatever it would be.
But it's interesting because you mentioned telling a story, and that's how you have defined how you interview
yes, it
people.
Is. Mm-hmm.
The desire to tell a story, having the passion and the curiosity.
You do a lot of research.
Yes, he
does. Because you lawyers all do the same.
That's what we have to do. It's a good lawyer who's very prepared. And then there's me, a great lawyer who knows the judges.
I will.
Oh, my God. No.
But I will say this, that I do. I think I looked at myself as not so much the questions, the Q&A. It was the storytelling. So I'd have to do your brother lost a leg in a tragic bass fishing accident like it is in Jerry Maguire. That was a spoof of a real interview I did where, you know, I would do these things.
That was great.
And here's another little fact. Cuba Gooding Jr., who played Rod Tidwell in Jerry Maguire, and who won the Academy Award, by the way, and I was in a scene in an Academy Award-winning actor. Unbelievable in my life. I'm just can't believe it. But the original Rod Tidwell was supposed to be, ready? Dennis Rodman. He turned it down.
Wow.
He turned it down, not because he didn't think he was a good actor, because it wasn't enough money.
Oh,
and you
boy.
Imagine.
What an idiot. But he's made some bad choices along the way, hasn't
but
he?
But Dennis Rodman was the original choice from the director, Cameron Crowe.
But Cuba got it. He just got
unbelievable.
It. He got it. I don't know if he, I don't think Dennis would have been as good.
And I'll tell you one other quick anecdote. When I did the movie with Tom Cruise, and you know, I'm not pretending I know Tom Cruise at all, but I walk in, he goes, oh my God, it's Roy Fire. This is Tom Cruise saying this to
he
me.
He said that?
Yeah. I'm the biggest fan of yours. You know, I'm a stock car racing fan. You've got to get more stock cars. Have you been with Cuba yet? I went, no, I lived in Miami, but I never, right?
Oh,
he goes, and I'm serious. I don't know who this guy
is.
I don't know who it is because he wasn't famous yet.
Right.
He wasn't really famous.
Right.
He
no,
did. I
true.
Think he did one of the other movies. I forget what it was. But anyway, so he introduces me with Cuba, and I'm going, where in Cuba are you from? I actually am saying this like an idiot. He goes, no, that's my name. I said, what do you mean? You said to Cuba. He goes, no, my name is Cuba. It took about 5 minutes to unwind that.
Oh, man.
And then, of course, the scene. And we did two takes.
He turned to Tom Cruise and said, who's this idiot? He's right. interviewing me.
Oh, my God, that's so funny. That was it. Two takes.
Two takes. The first take, he grabbed me from across the table. And I'm on one of these rolling chairs just like this right now. I have a rolling chair as we're speaking. I almost fell off the set and two grips grabbed me because I was going to fall backwards.
The second take
is the one you see.
Is there any bloopers, anything like that?
That was. I think they have that somewhere in the film. Somebody.
You should have that.
I would
yes.
love to have that.
Oh,
but it was
wonderful.
So cool because I'm walking out. I said to Cuba Gooding Jr., I said, you know, thanks for having me, and thanks, I said to Cameron Crowe, the director, too, and I said, but this thing's going to never see the light of day. And Cameron Crowe, as I'm walking, I'll never forget, he goes, don't be so sure. And I, because every movie I've ever been, it's the same thing. What's it like, champ? You know, you're interviewing,
and you
never see me. This was a major part
so
of the
So you
film.
Thought your scene would be cut?
Definitely. Oh, no question
and
about it.
And it became one of the greatest scenes
I remember
in the
when
movie.
Someone said, I just saw Jerry Maguire last night, it was unbelievable, you were great with him, and I went... who's Jerry Maguire? And that's how I didn't. I really,
you really thought
I didn't
you
know
were
the
cut.
Film. I didn't even know the film was out. And that's if anyone knows my life, they know that I'm unconscious about a lot of things. And I went the next day after someone explained what it was. I was there at the 11 a.m. show.
You opened up the theater.
Right. Were people like everywhere?
Everywhere I go, every day of my life, Carrie. For I guess the movie's about 20 years old.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm talking every airport, every. Car of L.A., every people go, don't make me cry, Roy. And then Paul said, don't make me cry, Roy. It was. I wish I had that on a little loop somewhere for my keychain. That was pretty cool.
That's awesome.
Wow. Speaking of
That's
a loop,
really awesome.
We've got to take a break.
Great.
We got some commercials to loop in here. We got one more segment with Roy Firestone. The book is called That's What I'm Talking About.
Available on Amazon.
And royfirestone.com. We'll be right back. Yeah, we're back. We're talking to Roy Firestone. And, Carrie, we've interviewed so many people over the years. This is a really nice guy sitting here.
Yeah.
And
thank
I
you.
Can tell. I have that feeling. I'm a
lawyer.
You're a lawyer. The lawyer. I know when someone's lying. I know when someone's giving me a story. But his heart, he's just so excited to talk about your dad. And it's genuine. It's
and
sincere.
About everyone.
Everyone.
All I ever wanted to do, people always say, oh, did you know what you wanted to do? I just wanted to be around a microphone. I just loved the microphone. Whether it was from the time I was a little kid doing the impressions for the baseball team as a bat boy or getting an opportunity. I was on the air at 22 years old on television in Miami. Then I came out here. I was like 23 and a half on television in L.A., on TV in the second largest market. But all I ever wanted to do is, how can I be around a microphone? And here I am again, around a microphone.
Right around a microphone. Wow. Now, in 87, you did some Sunday Night Football back then. Did you ever want to do baseball?
I did baseball in college. I was a play-by-play man. But
really?
I never had those pipes, you know, the baseball. Let me give you an idea of what it sounds like. In fact, I think I'll do it as Harry Carey. Because Harry Carey was an iconic voice. He always just sounded like a foghorn to me.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So let's give you a little background of baseball announcer.
For all you Cubs fans here.
Well, hello again, everybody. This is Harry Carey. Chicago Cubs baseball. Stepping up to the plate right now is Rodrigo Garcia. But batting 265 with 11 home runs and 55 RBIs. Interesting story about Garcia. In the offseason, he tried to stage a military coup against his government. There's a pitch fouled out of play, 1-1. Hey, don't forget, next Saturday night, it's Honor Third World Nation Night here at the ballpark at Wrigley Field. It'll be honoring Third World Nations. The first 5,000 fans from a Third World Nation will receive a Chevy Camaro, and the first 2,500 of them will get to strip the cars behind second base. Don't forget, 3 weeks from tonight at the ballpark, it'll be Hard Liquor and Handgun Night, and we love baseball, and that's all. I'm a Bud man and a Bud fan.
All right.
That's so good.
That was good.
That's
I thought you were going to break in to take me out to the ball game.
Wait a minute. Oh, God. There's another. I bet you Casey knew Harry. I bet you he did.
He may have. Did Jack Brickhouse take over for Harry?
Hey. It was another guy. Ernie Harwell. You're from Detroit. Ernie Harwell has heard me do my show. And he's a bit of a writer.
The Tigers guy.
The late, great Ernie Harwell was a bit of a writer and a poet. And he used to love that I would do these bits. Jack Buck, the great Jack Buck, and Joe took me out to lunch one day. Just give me impressions. They loved it. I was on Jack Buck's pregame show singing as Johnny Mathis.
Wow. Now, you've talked to so many people, and you've interviewed people, you've talked to them. Who are some of your favorites?
Well, Richard Nixon. I got the chance to interview Nixon. And the strangest thing is I was not a big political fan of Richard Nixon. A lot of us weren't in the time. But when you got to talk baseball, you know, he had that voice. You know, Roy Firestone, I see your show, and I enjoy your program. Now, I'm sitting there, and we're getting along because baseball is a language.
Sure,
you know,
you
know, I know you're a Brooks Robinson fan. You know, he's sitting there. So I'm having a great time, and all of a sudden, he says, you know, I saw the show with your dad, and that was a great show because it's one of my favorite shows. And I'm saying to myself, this is Nixon telling me this.
Wow.
So I get on the phone, and I call my father. The show is over. I said, Dad, you're not going to believe Richard Nixon. I just interviewed Richard. He goes, let me tell you, that son of a, he should be. I said, Dad, wait. He said, the show that you did with me was terrific. He thought you were fabulous. And he also wanted you to have his very best wishes. Wow. My father, long pause, he goes, well, you know, we did a lot of good things.
What a great guy.
That was my dad. You know? Awesome. You give him a compliment, that's all he needed to hear.
That's hilarious. I think a lot of dads would have said that. But, you know, in all seriousness, you've interviewed so many people. Some of the people haven't turned out to be the greatest people in history.
Right.
I remember, you know, I remember when Ike Sorkin, we've had a lot of people on who have represented, attorneys who have represented bad guys.
Mm-hmm.
We had Ike Sorkin on, who's the attorney for Bernie Madoff, still the attorney.
Right.
And he said while he was doing his representation, he had messages. One of them he remembered, the guy said, your whole family should have perished in the Holocaust.
God.
Oh, no.
Yeah, there were things, you know. And
I had OJ on, and very, very truncated version, so I know we're out of time. I interviewed him 4.5 years before the murders. And make no mistake, I believe he murdered two people.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we're not going to get into that right now. Okay, but it was 4.5 years before, and he had an incident with Nicole. And I asked him about it on the air, but I was very chummy with him because I'm saying, you know, people think that you're a wife beater. What happened? And he goes, well, nothing happened. You know, everything is all blown out. So I buy it on the air. But 4.5 years later, he kills two people. Now, flash forward 25 years later, they have the O.J. Made in America documentary. They run the clip of me saying,
calling him Juice.
Yeah, come on, Juice.
Oh, no.
You know, I'm doing real chummy stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
But they take it out of context 4.5 years before it happened. Like I was, and
like
I got,
you had interviewed him during that
time. Right, and on Twitter, in answer to the Bernie Madoff thing, I got somebody who said to me on Twitter, I hope you have daughters and they're murdered so they know what it's like.
Wow.
I mean, because you enabled domestic violence. I'm saying, really? Are you going to go down that road? So, you know, you're part of the celebrity bouillabaisse of social media. And, you know, you've been through, everybody's been through it. And all I can tell you is, you know, just, I know what kind of person I am, and I know what kind. But people get the wrong impression, or they feel like they're the king of whatever it is they're saying in the moment, and they want some kind of social media hit. So they'll say something outrageous, and sometimes very offensively.
But were you ever so impressed with someone that kind of lost what you were doing?
Well, Paul McCartney would be one. Elton John came up to me, and he said, you know, I've got to do the show. I've got to do the show. And I went, you want to? Okay. Maybe I can find room for you, Elton. He goes, but I want to talk about the Atlanta Braves. He said, Atlanta Braves? Found out, because he still lives in Buckhead, Atlanta.
Yeah.
And he watches Braves games every single night, every day, for the last 35 years. The biggest Braves fan. He said that he says he loves the Braves because he watched it because he was a shut-in. He couldn't leave his place because he's a gigantic celebrity. And then he says some nights when the Braves were in the playoffs, he'd be in the concert, doing a concert, and he'd have the Braves game on in his ear while he's doing the show. And if the Braves lost, he'd cut the show short, but if the Braves won, he'd give them three or four more songs.
He said that?
Yes, because he felt that he was in a good mood because his Braves won. He has been he's a gigantic tennis fan. He wrote Philadelphia Freedom for Billie Jean
That's
King,
right.
as you know. He owned a soccer club. But this was the biggest shock because I had no idea that Elton John was such a sports fan. And years later, after I did the interview, he goes, remember I told you about Rafael Foucault? And I told you that he was going to be good, and I was right, Roy. And it was like the weirdest. He wanted to come on only to talk sports.
That's amazing.
It was really,
it's really
and that's amazing. In the book, too.
Quickly, is there anyone who you haven't interviewed or haven't spoken to that you think, oh, give me a shot at him?
Well, sports, I never get to interview LeBron. I think he's an interesting guy.
Yeah.
I would have liked to interview. I just think that I've, you know, Serena, I haven't spoken to her since she's 13 years old. She was on my show, but not since.
She may have changed somewhat.
She may have changed a great deal. You know, I'm so blessed, you know, Alan and Carrie. This has been the greatest adventure. And that's why this book is out, because I wanted to share some of these experiences. That there's a piece about Mr. Rogers, and there's a piece about comedians that I've known, and Billy Crystal and Bill Walton. An amazing story about Bill Walton. Bob Costas is about his gambling father. But it's a fun, mostly a breezy, fun book with anecdotes and storytelling. And I just love doing it. And it's doing real well, too.
So if awesome. Anyone wants to get a hold of it, do you have any idea how someone could get the book?
Well, you could go to Amazon.
Wait, dude, and Casey Kasem.
You could go to Amazon and you listen to That's What I'm Talking About with Roy Firestone on Amazon. Or go to royfirestone.com and say Casey sent you.
And what if someone wants you to entertain their corporation?
Just go to royfirestone.com. Thank you for that plug. I love performing. And it's a fun show. It's a funny show. It's musical, obviously impressions, storytelling, but it'll make you cry, too. Literally will make you cry. In a good way. In a good way.
And when you look at the video on your website, you hear the reviews from people.
Yes.
And they're astonished.
Thank you.
It's genuine. They're looking and saying, I had no idea.
Yeah.
I had no idea.
That's the greatest compliment of all.
Roy, we had no idea we were going to have so much fun with you today.
It was the most fun I think we've ever had in the studio. Seriously.
We'll do it again. We will do it again.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you, Carrie. Thank you, Alan.
Thank you
so much for being here. Really appreciate it. And that's going to do it for this week's show. Stay tuned next week. It's going to be some more fun right here on Gervie's Law. Have a great week.
This show furnished by Rowan, Gervie, and Wynn.